The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Well, I really like today's show and how it lays out. Zach Clark, ESPN Radio Tucson, he's done a good job when he's come on in the past on the latest of U of A and Sean Miller. He was not, Sean Miller, not at practice yesterday. And will he coach against Stanford? What is the mood there in Tucson and all that around DeAndre Ayton? The story changing with the timeline from the FBI's report with ESPN and all of that with Zach Clark. David Griffin, a name from the past, showing up today on the show. Former Suns vice president of basketball operations, world champion general manager of the Cavaliers. Not there anymore. Now it's SiriusXM. Griff is going to be with us at 10:35. Your hometown heroes, the worst record in the NBA. Just how bad are they and how do you fix it from David Griffin's point of view? We'll get into quite a bit around the Suns and much, much more with Griff. That will come up at 10:35. So there's construction going on today, Eric. Do you hear any of the banging and clanging? I don't see Jared losing his mind. I'm hearing it in our building. Are they tearing us down today?
I don't know, but it's not uncommon for our friends here at Skyview to do some in-day construction as they continue to build bigger and better things.
Is this
here in
Skyview or is this the helicopter people down
it
the hall?
It could be the helicopter people.
Yeah, because it sounds like a plumber. So I'm hearing a plumber, Jared. I don't know if you guys. I'm fine with it. I mean, we do the show. We do our thing. So if you guys hear it, it sounds like my head is banging around. That could be the case too. I'm still fighting it. Still a little bit of a head cold, but very much looking forward to Zach Clark and David Griffin. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things going on in the world of sports. Some of the things on my mind. Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most, guys. Do you have your life insurance plans in place? Have you ever even once checked into life insurance? And now you're in that space in life where things are changing. Things are moving rapidly around you. Suddenly that girlfriend is now mama, and mama may be baby mama. I don't know what it is in your space, but you need to log on to Sagicor Now, get that free life insurance quote, and get yourself on the path to success. Do it at Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, we appreciate their support. There's some really interesting stuff going on, actually, beyond college basketball today. We did a lot on Sean Miller yesterday, and I'll do a lot more because I didn't get all of it out of me. I watched some of the Suns last night. Actually, yesterday afternoon, I went out into the community some and visited with some people, and I ended up in a space yesterday where I was with the ASU wrestling people. And I'll tell you about that a little bit later in the show and how this is a story. It's a story below the radar, obviously, but it's the story that you need to keep an eye on. And us here at Sports 360 AZ, that's what we do. When there's a below the radar story, we bring it up. And before you know it, everybody's going to jump on this one story. We're 2 weeks ahead of it, but there's some cool stuff there that I'll get to. Watching the Suns last night, I would like to think that there'd be interest in the community that they keep losing and how they go about losing, and they did lose again last night. This time they blew a 53-37 lead at New Orleans. Anthony Davis scored 53, had 17. Anthony Davis absolutely annihilated the Suns inside. The Suns had no inside presence. My guy, Marquese Chriss, actually he's not my guy, he's your guy. I've said since day one when they drafted him of, this is a foul-a-minute guy. My guy, your guy, fouled out in less than 20 minutes last night. Come on. And it just doesn't end with him. That's another first-round pick that if you're going up and down the roster saying, how do you fix this? You can say, well, they have some nice parts. Yeah, he jumps really high. He fouls an awful lot. His attitude is hit and miss. I look at Jay Triano afterwards, and I think it's Scott Bordeaux that posts like the post-game interviews. I can't even begin to think that I would watch any of that. It's nothing against Scott. What am I need to hear? And so here's your hometown heroes. Devin Booker scores 40, and I'm just like, he scored 40. I saw Alvin Gentry give him a hug after the game is over. I love Alvin like the next guy. And the way the NBA works, I wouldn't be surprised if the hug is, hey, you should be here with our guys. It wouldn't surprise me. So the Suns get drilled again, and that's just how it goes. If we're going to hear about moral victories and all this nonsense, no. It's somebody sent me a note last night suggesting that I need to add up the number of victories that the Suns have in the last 3 years. Numbers of victories Suns have in the last 3 years versus the numbers of victories they have the last year they went to the playoffs, which is 2010. And that the number over the last 3 years of wins would not equate the total number of victories they had in 2010. I might do that during a break. On the college basketball front, I'm going to shift away from U of A for a minute. I'm going to get into Bobby Hurley. So Bobby Hurley has shown this propensity to go after referees. That is one thing that I've heard from fans is I wish that he would just coach his team a little bit better and not be so worried about getting after refs. Bobby Hurley yesterday was fined, reprimanded $10,000 after going after some refs or a ref at the Oregon State game over the weekend. It was a weekend in which Arizona State gets swept. It's a bad weekend. You can't sugarcoat it. You can't put it any other way. Fortunately for ASU basketball, them getting swept at Oregon was the same weekend that the letters FBI and U of A came out. So nobody's watching this. So here's the bit of video from what happened up there. You know, Bobby's losing his mind. And it just doesn't go their way. And Bobby's looking for a foul. You see his arms up there. That's how Bobby is. And that's a big part of Bobby. And he's just getting after the refs. And it's over, and he's going to follow, and he's going to follow, and he's going to keep following. He's going to follow him into the tunnel. And this cost Bobby Hurley $10,000. Now, some of you may say, well, I'll pay that $10,000 fine. I'm of the opinion that the Pac-12, and I've actually had some referees who I know that have said they tolerate what he does, but he's not going to be able to do any of that when it comes to conference tournament play or when the team gets to March Madness. It's kind of like this. When a team is in the regular season and they develop a habit or a tendency, referees start looking at that habit and tendency and they don't look the other way, or they don't just let them sit over there and stew. If it's a January game against Washington State, just deal with it. If it becomes a Pac-12 tournament game and you're going against Washington State, it may be not so fast. We're not going to tolerate that. Boom, you're done. And if you get into March Madness, so the fact that they fine and reprimand Hurley, the Pac-12 does that. Is this the Pac-12's way of saying, knock it off now? As fans, I think you guys like to see this, but not all of you like to see this. If there's been one constant criticism that I have gotten on Bobby Hurley from Arizona State season ticket holders of basketball, it is he argues way too much. He is over the top way too much. When I watch him coach, I love the passion. I love the energy. But I cannot deny the fact that there are times where I'm looking at him saying, you've got to get your team together and let a call go. This team has not been very good consistently since the first part of January. I am not buying into the, well, it's just conference play. I'm not buying into that. That's an easy way to get out of it. And so there's this enthusiasm of Bobby Hurley. And now the Pac-12 says, we're going to fine you because you went too far. Is this the front end of, if this stuff continues in Vegas next week, and we are going to be in Vegas next week, thanks to our good friends at Columbus Craft Meats. Thanks to JP. And are we going to see more of this from Bobby Hurley? And how are fans going to react to that if it feels as though it is taking away from the game? Me, I think if he had an inside player or two, it would be a much different feel, a much different look. But as I've said all year, when you live by the three, you die by the three, and that's what's happened. Sean Miller, and what is the latest after this timeout? We're going to go to Tucson. Zach Clark, ESPN Radio Tucson, he's been with us in the past. We'll jump on in on this story. And then David Griffin, former Suns GM, comes up in about 15 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now we turn our attention to what's going on in Tucson with the University of Arizona. I could go a couple different directions here. I could go with Rich Rod releasing the Hideaway book, I just don't flat care about. Or I can go the direction of U of A basketball because I am sensing that as the news broke Friday night, it was 100% or 98% get Sean Miller out of here. To today, it's about, I don't know, 70% he needs to go, 30% he needs to stay, and there's too many holes in this ESPN story. Sean Miller did not coach yesterday that much, at least in practice, that much I know. I don't know anything more than that, and that's why I turned to Zach Clark, ESPN Radio Tucson host. He's been with us before. He's done a very good job down there. I appreciate you coming on board, Zach. Where are you at in Sean Miller? Does he need to go? Does he need to stay? Are you up in the air?
Well, you know, at this point, I do think I am somewhat up in the air only because I don't know what Arizona knows, but I do know how Arizona feels at this moment. I mean, if they're not comfortable, he didn't travel home with the team. He didn't coach the team on Saturday. He didn't coach the team yesterday. Look, if they're not comfortable with this guy leading the team, what are we doing here, right? I mean, the university hasn't moved the needle one way or the other. They haven't fired him, which is fine. They haven't suspended him, which is something. They're just kind of duck and dodging. And people keep telling me, well, Zach, due process. And, well, you know, we need to get to the bottom of this. Arizona needs to get this right. This is a huge thing. And, look, other universities are soon to be dealing with this, too. Arizona will not be alone. Not that that makes anybody feel better. Mm-hmm. The university has to get this right. But, look, it's not July, right? It's going to be March on, what, Thursday? They can't dawdle. They can't sit on their hands. There's a lot at stake this weekend. Arizona can clinch and win a Pac-12 championship. Dusan Ristić can become the winningest player in program history, senior night on Saturday. And it's Tuesday, and we don't know who's going to be the coach. It's crazy.
Yeah. Does any of that stuff, though, matter at the end of the day to the average fan out there about Dusan and winning? I know the U of A fan, Zach, is as diehard as they can be, and I think they're going to die hard on this story. I'm not taking a shot at them. It's just it's a fact the direction this is going. So what you're telling me today here on Tuesday is there's no idea if Sean is going to coach Thursday night. We have not heard from the president of the U of A as of yet that he could either defend the guy, fire the guy, suspend the guy, right? There's no other direction for them to go. Outside of that, the U of A is handling this in a way that speaks, it hits me as this is how they've always been around basketball. Very arrogant, very sure of themselves. We're not going to tell anybody anything. There was no media availability from the coach yesterday. There was no Monday press. There was no even Lorenzo Romar yesterday, right? Or was there? Was there anything?
They canceled. On Monday night, Sean Miller has a weekly radio show at a restaurant. They canceled that.
And that with no explanation.
Bear down, hashtag.
Yeah.
And, no, seriously.
I mean, that's the stuff that I think leads me to sit here and believe that this may work in a college town like Tucson for other stuff. This is a national story. This is a program that people like to tell me it is the best basketball program in the country. And I would say, yeah, it's fine. Get to a Final Four and then get back to me about how great it is. As I'm sitting here right now, you can't handle FBI in the same manner as on the basketball court business. That's where I'm at on this, Zach.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, if you look at the things that have happened over the last few seasons with Arizona Wildcats basketball, we can go back a few years to Elliott Pitts, right, and the way that that situation was handled, where at one point Sean Miller defended his character. Well, he'd probably like to have that one back at this point. Elliott Pitts never played again, and we never heard another word. And then for 19 games last year, Alonzo Trier sat, which that whole thing is another story and a complete mess all on its own. But Arizona didn't say a word about it, not a word. And then one day, boom, he's back. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like a year later, he's gone again. And this time they've said a little more only because we knew what happened last time. But I can't say that, like, to your point, that any of this is a surprise as far as the way that they've handled it. And no, things are different now. When the NCAA comes stumbling in like a drunkard, hey, change your, nobody listens, right? Well, when the Justice Department comes in and kicks your door down, everybody's attention goes there. And that's why, you know, Brad, I have to wonder, we all learned about this story, if it's true, from Mark Schlabaugh on Friday. It's totally possible, if it is true, that the university has known about this for months and is not surprised, right? I mean, don't you think they probably have a little more access to information than we do, right? And, of course, nobody has to share with anybody, so I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona already knew about this.
Okay, so let me back up. We're talking with Zach Clark, ESPN Radio Tucson. The idea, and you use the term because I've started to get this sent to me, if it's true, I find it very, very, very hard to believe that a media outlet like ESPN would let something 100% illegitimate, not sourcing it, not checking the source, just somebody calling into the desk saying, this is going on. Are there some holes? Yeah, there's some details that can make you say, all right, did they rush with this story because they had so much? When I hear there's 3,000 hours of audio tapes the FBI has on all this, and you've heard the same thing, you know, it, to me, the idea that this isn't true at all, anybody who's hanging on to that is bleeding blue and red and just looking at things through blue and red glasses. I'm not saying that about you, Zach. I'm just saying in general on this story. Clearly, there is something there. Clearly, there's something there.
No. You are absolutely right. And look, the problem that ESPN is having right now is in their rollout. They didn't handle the execution, the delivery of this story. I don't see any of it poking holes in Mark Schlabaugh's story. And for that matter, I don't hear anybody. Here's what's most important to me. Point to me the person at the university that has denied any of this.
Sure. Well, Sean has said I'm going to be vindicated, but what is Sean going
Nobody
to say?
Nobody else said that.
And it was Sean on a piece of paper, so you know it was an attorney writing that statement. It wasn't Sean on camera. You know, that's part of the whole deal too. To me, it feels like Sean Miller is sitting there with his hands in his pockets, with his jacket on, shrugging his shoulders and saying, "Prove it, prove it."
Yes.
That's where I'm at Tuesday.
At some point, it's going to come out. It'll come out. This isn't going to be hidden forever. And when the university decides to act on it, I mean, I thought it had to be yesterday. And so if it's not yesterday, I mean, I guess it's got to be by Thursday.
Yeah. And so as you're looking at the U of A on this, you're sitting there every afternoon talking to fans from Friday night when this started through your show yesterday and this morning on your social media. What is the vibe that you're getting? I ask you this off the top. I'm drilling down a little bit further on how can anybody be defending the program at this point? It's probably in the best interest, from my view, to just tear it down, go 2-16 in conference play next year, and move on. Sharif O'Neal's not recommitting. Brandon Williams, I don't know if he's decommitted yet or not, but as you're sitting here with your recruiting class, you don't have anything left. Ayton is leaving. Trier is gone. Jackson Cartwright's gone. Tear it down.
Yeah. Doosan's gone. Raleigh's gone. Right? I mean, they're going to lose a lot. And look, I'll tell you, I don't know how you measure the metric, but there is a strong defiance inside of this program. I said this to somebody earlier, and I'm not going to get into politics, but it seems like where we are right now in our political system, things are fractured, things are tribalized,
sure.
We're pushed one way to one side, one to the other.
That's true.
I mean, Brad, there's this rabid group of people that just holes,
yeah.
And taking that football and ran with it. And then there's the other half. And look, everybody here takes basketball very seriously. One half is saying, screw you, ESPN, this is wrong. The other half is saying, oh, my God, somebody poisoned our well. Get this guy out of here.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole fake news thing, I've gotten some of that too.
Look,
I appreciate you coming on. I wanted to get a vibe from you down there. So as you and I sit here at 10:31 and 30 seconds, there is nothing new on Sean Miller's status for this Thursday night.
No.
All right, I'll let you go off that. Appreciate you jumping on board. There's Zach Clark.
Anytime, Brad.
You got it. ESPN Radio Tucson. Good stuff. David Griffin, Suns VP, the former Suns VP of basketball operations, the general manager of the world champion Cleveland Cavaliers, no longer there, now doing some radio work with me next. I'm Brad Sussman. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussman, Football AZ, airs tonight. Brett Hundley will be our guest, the Green Bay Packer quarterback on the NFL Combine, the preparation for Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, and others. We'll also have plenty of college and high school football recruiting news, too, with Jason Jewell Jordan Hamm, Haley Stasiak, and Eric Sorensen. Let's turn our attention now to David Griffin. Very excited to finally catch up with him. We've been trying to connect. Former Suns VP of Basketball Ops, world champion GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers, but now at SiriusXM. I wanted to have Griff on a number of subjects. The U of A, what's going on there, the one-and-done rule, how is he doing, so on and so forth. So let's start with the generic stuff. How are you?
Doing well, Brad. Good to be with you. Excited when I heard that the big guy was calling for me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you let me in your circle. I appreciate that. How's that?
You've been there a long time, Brad.
How's SiriusXM? What are you doing there?
It's good. Do a couple shows a week. Deals and Dunks is really more of a GM slanted thing. I guess you would call that my show. Mm-hmm. I typically host that with Joel Myers on Saturdays, typically from 1 to 4 Eastern. Something that's really been enjoyable to get to do, and again, getting to control some of the content and trying to make it a little more front office laden in terms of the way we look at things and the kinds of questions we're asking, et cetera. And then do another show during the week as well, and I'm currently in Atlanta getting ready to do my Tuesday-Wednesday swing on NBA TV, which I'll do basically throughout the rest of the season as well, and have been doing since probably December. So it's fun. This is a lot less stressful than working in a front office, for sure.
Okay, when I first met you, to think that you would go into media would not be too far-fetched, because that's where you and I first met. To see you do this type of media is something that's like, wow, okay, he's really stretched himself into new spaces and places. Are you surprised with your media rise?
Well, I guess if there's been a rise that would surprise me, I'd be totally unaware of it. I think my mom and my wife are probably the only ones that listen on a regular basis. But it's been a lot of fun to learn something completely new, something that I really didn't know a great deal about. Had done student radio for a while at the University of Arizona and was always intrigued by that medium. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I'd be lying if I said I anticipated this would happen at all, certainly.
All right, so let's do the Deal and Dunks side when talking about the Phoenix Suns. Just, can you sit there with a blank canvas and give me a deal and dunk on what is going on here? Because I'm sitting here as a frustrated host, frustrated community member. The last playoff game, David, was May 27th of 2010. And I'm sitting here almost 8 years later, and it's not going to happen again this year. What do you see in Phoenix from a deal and dunk standpoint?
Well, I think, first of all, they're really blessed in the sense that among the teams that are lottery teams, they're actually one that has a destination player and a talent who probably could be the number one player on a team, and certainly could be number two on a team that's a Final Four team, and Devin Booker. And most teams that are rebuilding and going through the process of tanking don't have a guy at the level of Book. So that's a positive for them, certainly. I think what's happened big picture-wise is they've sort of got caught in between a little bit. They weren't exactly all about the young developing players. They signed some veterans as well. I think they signed some people specifically to go after LaMarcus Aldridge that they still have and were unable to get LaMarcus. So I think that certainly set them back, which is fine. I mean, you've got to put yourself in position to be in the game, and they did that. But I think now they've been caught a little bit in between. And I'm really excited about the development of Josh Jackson of late. I think he's come on significantly. That's something that I would be looking at as a real positive as a Suns fan. But I think they're going to have to go through this process, and it's very hard for young kids to play well together when they're all together. Mm-hmm. Because nobody there is making anyone better. You know, the absence of a point guard who makes everyone better makes the game a lot more difficult. And so I think the acquisition of Elfrid Payton was a really good high-variance, low-cost swing, a kid that when he came in, his size and, frankly, his defensive component was what excited people the most. So he could potentially be a guy who's a good fit with Book in that backcourt. And with Josh, they've got some pieces to build with. It's just been a long, slow process. And I think the biggest reason for that is the worst thing we do in the league is try to flip the switch too soon and think we're better than we really are. Mm. And I think they had a year there. Didn't they win 48 games and just miss the playoffs?
Yep.
I'm sorry, 38 games and just miss the playoffs?
Yep.
I think that was the worst thing that can happen to you, because if you buy into you're ready to make the jump and you're too early trying to make that jump, you really put yourself in harm's way. And I think that's something that many, many, many teams throughout the league have dealt with, and unfortunately that was just something that probably set back their growth.
Do you believe, as I do, that get really bad to get really good? Do you buy into that?
I do and I don't. You know, in Cleveland, we were able to win a championship, frankly, seeing what we kind of considered a rebuild and a long-term rebuild that we modeled on Seattle/Oklahoma City very much. They had gotten very high draft picks and taken swings on Harden, Westbrook, and Durant. And when we got to Cleveland, LeBron had left in July. I got there in September. It was kind of like jumping into a burning building. Yeah. But we had carte blanche to do what we wanted to do. And so without calling it tanking, we certainly were doing a lot of those things and playing through the draft and trying to maximize the value of our roster, selling off assets for future picks, and trying to leave our books clean enough that we could get assets for taking money as well. And we were able to see that through because it just so happened that the greatest player of his generation was from Akron. But even then, we had to reverse engineer a little bit because we had put ourselves in salary cap peril a little bit. So we had to give up a pick to get rid of the Jared Jack, Tyler Zeller money that then put us in position to have Max. So it's not an easy, seamless fit. But I do think that the general notion of creating a long-term sustainable model based around young kids and clean salary sheets is really good. It's just that you have to be able to attack it from all three fronts of draft, trade, and free agency. And if you can't do that, and if you miss on a pick or if you miss on your trades, you're in there in terms of the lottery for a very long time. I mean, the history shows that if you're in there for 4 years, you tend to be in there for between 8 and 12 years, and that's not good. So you need to be getting out at the right time.
Well, and to that point, David, I think if you look at the roster, to your point on some of these picks, you know, where Alex Len was taken and how he's come out of it, where Marquise Chris was taken and how he's come out of it, Bender shows some promise. All these kids show some promise, but none of them have really gone to that level that you would anticipate for being high picks. And I think that therein lies the issue that I've seen here. It feels as though it's just a developmental team year after year after year, to your opening point of kids on the court all together without having those veterans that are there to show them the way. It sounds great to have Jared Dudley come back. I got it. It was no different than Steven Grant towards the end here. But there just has not been the collection on this roster put together that has made sense, that has worked.
Well, I think, again, you can see the impact of the right veterans in Minnesota. So they were really struggling. They had high variance young kids. And they brought Jimmy and Taj Gibson in, and those were the right guys at the right time. And they really sort of started to gel and take off a little bit. But, again, in the absence of those guys, in the absence of clear leadership from a veteran who plays all the time, it's one thing if you're a really good team and you have a veteran presence in the locker room that really doesn't play that much, but he's a great locker room guy.
Yeah.
It's another thing if you're a young team and the veteran doesn't play that much, because now you don't have anybody making the kids better and more comfortable. So I think that's the environment that's really, really hard to thrive in. And so I think they just ran aground a little bit because the guys they were counting on to make people better either left or were dealt. And I think that just causes you some pain in terms of the growth process. And then it makes it far more difficult to judge guys like Bender and Chris, who are ancillary guys who mm-hmm. need the guy who can make them better.
So from your point of view, Booker, Josh Jackson, you mentioned off the top, you put TJ Warren in that class, not star player, but good, solid NBA player? Or is he still, in your opinion, on the periphery?
I think he's somebody who's proven he can be a rotational piece on a solid team, I think. Mm-hmm. Again, it's so hard to know because these moments are not filled with real pressure and clutch moments where you're learning what guys are going to do when it's time to win. It's really hard to know that. But again, I think a lot of these kids, in the presence of the right veterans that are facilitating playmakers that play both sides of the court, I think a lot of these kids could look better. This is not a team devoid of talent. It's just a team that's talent doesn't quite fit together yet.
David Griffin with us, former Suns VP of basketball ops, the world champion GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers, now with SiriusXM, with us for a couple of minutes. A couple other questions, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time. The idea of where they are right now, worst record in the NBA, tanking, from my point of view, is something that has needed to happen. They just haven't done it enough. Are you seeing them when they play tanking, or do you still see Jay Triano putting out a team that is trying to play through and win games, and does that make sense?
Well, I think there's so many things that go into this when you're as young as that team is. I think you've got guys that are playing to prove their worth. I think you've got guys that are trying to get stats. You've got young kids that don't even know what they are yet, sort of going at it. You're not seeing a whole lot of cohesion that would come from trying to put your best lineups on the court and make everybody better. But I think that's part of what the plan is. And last year, they sat two perfectly healthy guys for almost 2 months of the year to tank. So I think they've gone in about as far as you can go in to really put yourself in position to get the best lottery picks you can. I think what's interesting is because they're playing the way they're playing right now, guys like Josh are actually performing at a pretty high level. And they've been just competitive enough at times to be interesting. Mm-hmm. But the thing I would like to see is you've got to have an identity, and you've got to have some sort of a commitment to one another that you don't get to see in this setting. And that's why tanking becomes really detrimental over time, because if all you do is learn how to lose together, it's very difficult to flip the switch and learn how to win. And so it's almost, if you get all in on tanking, that's great, then you might get a good draft pick, but then the downside is those kids don't organically learn how to win together. And so it's a risk fraught approach. It's not an easy binary thing to say, if we tank, things will turn out well.
If you turn it around and look towards the draft, is it simply a foreign player and two bigs with the number one overall pick in this year's draft from your view?
You know, it's hard for me because I haven't seen some of those kids in person. Mm-hmm. I think the big in this draft that could go number one overall is really exciting because he plays so well in space for a guy his size.
We're talking Ayton? Are we talking DeAndre Ayton?
Yes.
Okay, so it's just Ayton. Yeah, so there's Ayton, there's Bagley. Is it those two, or do you go with foreign player as well?
Well, I think Doncic is definitely in the conversation. I don't know that he's necessarily a great fit for Phoenix, but Doncic is a really, really special talent. He's got incredible size for his playmaking ability. He's got a toughness and grit that belies his age. He's done nothing but win at a really high level, being a focal point of winning at a really high level. Whereas Kristaps Porzingis, by way of example, when he was drafted really early, he was never the reason his team won games at any level of his development, which makes it harder. You're taking a much bigger risk, whereas Doncic is the reason a very good EuroLeague team wins EuroLeague games. So that's a good indicator. I think in the case of Bagley and Ayton, there's good indicators as well, just from a versatility defensively standpoint. Ayton's going to be somebody that I believe will score in the paint pretty well. I don't like the fact that he's not a better shot blocker. I think it shows a little bit of a lack of innate feel for the game that would concern me as a rim protector. Mm. But as a specimen and as a guy who's capable of being an enormous player that will play with some motor, who will be able to defend in space, he's just a very rare, rare guy.
They use the term Tim Duncan around him, the player comparison. Do you see that, or do you see someone else?
I don't know him well enough as a kid, but I don't think that would be fair to anybody in any draft to ever call them that. I mean, you're talking about a once-in-a-lifetime guy as a leader, as a human being, from a skill set standpoint, from an innate ability to win basketball games. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to compare anybody to him, and I don't think it would be fair to even lump him into a category like that.
Before I let you go, let's go back to your student radio days at U of A you talked about. You look at what's going on at U of A right now, and this leads into one and dones and what to do about payment and FBI and wiretaps and all sorts of stuff, David. This is the overriding story going on out here about U of A's future. If you want to address that, that's fine. I'm looking to you to say, here's the issue that is at hand of getting the one and dones out, that the agents, the runners, all the nonsense that seems to go on between AAU ball, junior, senior year of high school, the 1 year, and then getting to the league. To me, that seems to be the underbelly of all this.
Yeah, and I think it goes well beyond AAU and well beyond junior, senior year of high school. I mean, I think you're talking about kids that are being anointed as the chosen one from as early as seventh grade. I mean, we've got rankings now that exist for the best seventh grader in the country, the best eighth. That's nauseating to me. And it creates an environment where there's going to be corruption because everybody's trying to get their hooks into these kids and profit off of them. And then the kids start to think of themselves as something more or bigger than they really are at that point. And they don't get to just be kids. So I think one of the underlying issues that we have right now, both as a league and as the NCAA, is that these elite kids don't always develop on an elite path. And then they're sort of left without having evolved and grown as kids. So I'd love to see the league, and I know Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts have put a lot of time into this. I would love to see the league go back to a situation where everyone is eligible out of high school and there's no declaring. You're just eligible. Because if that were true, then you wouldn't have agents involved in convincing kids to put their name in the hat. They would just be eligible, and you would get taken or you wouldn't. Hmm. And if you sign to go to an NCAA school, you should have to stay a minimum of 2 or 3 years, whatever it is they can come settle on. Baseball's 3 years, I believe, is how they do it. So I think there's a model that can exist that can help both sides of the equation relative to the kids and the NCAA. But what's not going to help the NCAA is for them to act like this Adidas situation, that Sean Miller and any of these things are isolated situations. There's 25 agents just exactly like the one who brought about this whole conversation in the first place. Mm. And there's more than one shoe company that was doing the things that they were doing. This has been going on for years and years. And so if what they want to look at is, we're never going to allow kids to take any money whatsoever, then they're never going to have anybody be eligible for their tournament. I think the NCAA is going to have to look at something and say, if it cannot be proven that these schools were party to getting this money to them via agents, then the kids are probably going to have to be eligible, because literally Andy Miller is one of 25, maybe 40 agents that was doing something very similar.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be the one that got caught. So it's a system that absolutely is not working for anyone at the moment.
Free trade for these players? Do you buy into that?
Yeah, to some degree.
Yeah.
I certainly buy into it relative to off the court. I don't think the kids should be paid by the colleges. But I do think if kids have the ability to make money off the floor in any sport, off the field, off the pitch, whatever that might be, I think those kids ought to be allowed to do that. I mean, we've gotten to the point of total and complete absurdity. University of Colorado almost didn't let a kid play football who was a freestyle skiing world champion because he had made money in skiing.
Mm-hmm.
This is absurd at this point. So I think they're definitely going to have to address some pretty archaic rules if they're going to salvage what remains of the NCAA.
Hey, really enjoyed our conversation and the time. Thanks for making it, and I'll catch up with you down the road, we hope. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Brad.
Always good to catch up with people like David Griffin, former Suns VP of Basketball Ops, world champion GM of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and now at Sirius XM. I have a feeling he is not going to be at Sirius XM. I'm going to speak out on his without his knowledge now he's gone. He's not going to be at Sirius XM for the rest of his career. It's a good place, don't get me wrong, but he's going to be back in the league at some point. And for those of you sending me notes saying, ask him about being GM of the Suns, it's not fair. There's already a GM here. What are you nuts? It's not going to happen. Now, if it changes, sure. Back with more after this timeout on a busy Tuesday. Before we get out of here, and by the way, if you're just jumping on board on the stream, whether on sports360az.com or on AZ Central, the show repeats hour after hour for the next 24 hours. So the David Griffin stuff and the Zach Clark stuff today, really, really solid. Yesterday, I spent some time with Zeke Jones. Zeke Jones is the wrestling coach at Arizona State. And for many of you, you're like, really, Brad? You're going to do college wrestling? I'm about community. Here's a story that is percolating beneath the surface that in the next 2 weeks is going to grow into something very big here locally, in my opinion. ASU had 8 wrestlers win at Pac-12 championships. It's only the second year of the program. Back-to-back, they've won the Pac-12 title. Back-to-back. The Nationals are in Cleveland March 15th through the 17th. President Crow, who used to wrestle back in the day, and Ray Anderson are both going for the entire time to support Zeke. some of the stories behind these players, these wrestlers, are phenomenal. And you're going to see some of them on the site. So if you're one of those, and I've had people that have contacted me, like, why don't you do lacrosse? Or why don't you do this? You say you're 360. Why don't you do a little bit more on MMA? Or why don't you do some on golf or this or that? It's all about contributing. Okay, we have a great staff here. And there's just a number of on our staff, a limited number on our staff. So if you have something in the community and you want to shoot it over to us to take a look at, that's how we get these cool stories that show up on the site. It's really fun. That's our show for today. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen produces, as always, does a great job. Haley Stasiak, Jordan Hamm, the interns today, Perry Cohen, and I think Allie. I saw Allie walk in, I think. But we appreciate them and their work. Appreciate you checking us out. We are self-funded, so without our sponsors, without these spots that you see during the broadcast, we don't do this. So we appreciate those that fund us to do this. It's been 6 years, and we appreciate their support. Have a great Tuesday.